Don's been a friend of mine for many years, and I finished the Tracy Chapman tour with her a couple of years ago. And usually when you go on tour with people, no matter how cool they are, no matter what good friends they are, you're often in such enforced proximity for so long that, you know, the last thing you want to do is hang out some more. But Don was an exception. We came back really eager to start our little duo project. And so we've only been doing it about 2 years, but she's someone I've known for decades at this point.
Okay, what's so cool about Dawn? Like, what makes you want to work with her like this?
Well, first she's just my friend, and second, she has a really, really cool, you know, style as a drummer, and I think it's good ballast for some of the ways I play. She's not afraid to play simply. She doesn't necessarily play the flashiest parts in the world, but just every time she picks up the sticks, it just feels, you know, good and relaxed and musical. And just about everybody who's ever played with her has a similar response. And I think it's a good combination between some of the, you know, the free floating stuff that I do and the strongly tethered to the earth feel that she has. Also, a large part of what she does in the band is an exceedingly thankless task in that we're playing to loop almost all the time, but we're not playing to an actual click track. Everything is manually triggered. Mm-hmm. And when I make slight screw-ups in timing, which I do incessantly, she has a phenomenal skill to paper over them and smooth them up and cover for my mistakes. So not only do I love how she plays, she has a fabulous knack for making me sound a great deal more together than I actually am. So I feel very fortunate to get to play with her.
So what's your creative process like? How do you guys put songs together?
That's kind of interesting. I'm gonna back up one step and then swing back around to that question because it's kind of cool.
Okay.
One of the inspirations for doing this particular project was that I'd done a couple of years of sound design work for Apple, and the software host that we use when we play music is a program called Mainstage, MAIN SINGER, which is part of a larger Apple program called Logic. And I was a major developer on that program. And a lot of what I worked on was, designing sounds, specking out how some of these virtual components would sound. And I was so under the hood with that project for so long that the other inspiration for this band, besides just wanting to do something with my pal Don, was to, take out and to have a way to play with some of the stuff that I've been geeking out on in the studio for a couple of years and to try and bring it into a live situation. And in that world, a lot of the things that I've spent time creating are like individual soundscapes and individual combinations of sounds that, you know, evoke a particular mood and emotion. And more so than any other compositional project I've ever done, in this case, a lot of the process has to do with kind of making palettes of striking and compatible sounds. So it's almost like, I don't know if you imagine, an artist drawing with, pencils or pastels, and they've got a huge, tray with, thousands of different, colors and values and shades. And they have a, picture in mind, and maybe they're reaching into this box and pulling out, a half dozen or a dozen, complementary colors that they think would make a nice set together.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit how the composition process works in the band. That there might be a sound that inspired a jumping off point, and then I might think in terms of the second sound that would complement it, and the third sound that would contrast it and make a welcome break from the primary sound, and then I wind up with these sets of between 6 and 10, colors, and then I'll load them into the computer, and then we'll play on them, and then from that point, and it's kind of the old jam in your rehearsal studio until you get something good process, except in each instance, I'm going into it pre-armed with this, fistful of colors that I have a hunch will blend nicely. I'll use the Piano example as a case study since you've mentioned that incredibly disgusting, distorted sound, was a sound that I designed for, Logic 9, and I always just thought it was just the nastiest, harshest, hard rock sound I heard. I wanted to try doing a piece around it, and then when we started thinking about complementary colors, kind of things that I would tend to pair it with would be these very, pretty, floaty, dreamy sort of sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that case, the inspiration was this one particularly gruesome sound, but then kind of playing against the gruesomeness sound with sounds that are actually kind of pretty and melodic, and seeing how they fit together. So, kind of long-winded, but I hope that answers the question a little bit.
Can we talk a little bit about Mr. Reno too? Because that was that's a really cool song. How did that all come about?
Oh, thank you. Well, Mr. Reno was Don's dearly departed cat. So it's really, on the simplest level, it's just a love song tribute to a really cool cat. it's not a very sophisticated answer, but it's kind of the truth. In terms of the sonics, I was definitely kind of reverting to, it was a little bit of a 30 year ago flashback for me. Cause when I was very young, I was just absolutely obsessed with West African music. And I got to play a lot of Afrobeat back in the early 80s with some really, really noted, players from, Nigeria and Ghana. And when I was, when I was a 21, 22 year old player, I just lived for that stuff. And I've always loved it, but haven't really, played it as such in many years. So obviously, the rhythm foundation from that owes a lot to 70s, 70s Afrobeat. But in terms of layering over it, I definitely went to the well of, another color I love a lot, which is, I'm not a jazz musician by any stretch, but I love jazz and have played with some, great, great jazz musicians. But I was, definitely thinking of Ellingtonian sort of colors. So it's sort of that idea of having kind of a snaky, chromatic Ellingtonian melody over kind of a slightly fucked up and off-kilter Afrobeat groove while paying tribute to a really cool pet.
How do you think you'd sell you guys to a music fan? Someone that's just, hopping around, a Last FM or something like that, and then, Mental 99 comes on, and they're saying, okay, should I stay? Should I go? How would you describe you guys to them? Because you guys are very, very hard to pigeonhole into a group.
Yeah, well, all of us musicians hate answering that question, but on the other hand, I'm a music journalist too, so I've thousands of players answer that question too, so I might as well suck it up and take it.
Thank you.
in the most elemental form, I think what we play is instrumental rock, and obviously it's different from how a lot of other people have defined instrumental rock. But I like to think that it appeals to anybody who can abandon themselves to a catchy tune and a evocative, somewhat otherworldly soundscape. I hope it's not instrumental rock in the sense of dick wagging technical guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But that that it makes a certain sort of mood. That it's mood music. I'm down with mood music.
So what are your real goals with this group? What do you want to accomplish?
Kinda what we're doing. I'd like to, I hope it can reach more people, and hope more people relate to it. But it was, the primary goals were to have a collaboration with a musician I like and respect a lot, and explore some of the you know, sound design and sound worlds that are you know, new to me, because it's, you know, things that I've worked on professionally for the last couple of years. And then also partly, I wanted a middle-aged guitar challenge. I wanted to do something that would, you know, I played for, you know, since I was a little kid, and I really wanted something that would kind of kick my ass as a player and make me have to really sweat to be able to pull it off. And I got more than I asked for in that regard, because the group is really technically challenging. I wasn't sure if you picked up on it from the record, but the first album was entirely a, you know, recorded live in the studio project. There's no overdubs on that record, so it's kind of this balancing act of trying to keep all those parts, you know, in the air at the same time. We don't play the pre-recorded tracks, but when we play live, I'll play a part, you know, record it, loop it, and then, you know, layer things over that and try to create a song structure out of these swatches of guitar that I, you know, recorded into the looper. And yeah, it's hard. It's about the. I definitely feel like I'm about at the outer limits of my mental capacity doing it. It's hard, but that's what I asked for.
Okay.
I would. You know, I guess my hope for it in terms of how the world sees it is that it, you know, would be meaningful for anybody who's got a taste towards cool, semi-improvised instrumental music. You know, I love some of the great rock and pop instrumentals of the 60s and 70s, and it's a sensibility we've kind of, you know, moved away from in a lot of our music, and so much of instrumental music tends to be really, you know, like, heavily stylistically formatted. I mean, something's a jazz record, or it's not a jazz record, or it's a, you know, it's a, you know, noodly jam band project, or it's not a noodly jam band project. And I guess I would hope it would appeal to someone who has some interest in that intersection between, you know, composition and improvisation and mood music, in the sense of, you know, anyone who's kind of willing to, you know, submit them to, you know, luxuriate for a while in a, you know, I hope, you know, complex and evocative sound world.
Do you think the changes in the music industry over the past, you know, 10 years with the indie scene being so important and the lack of you don't need a record company anymore, you think that helps you guys?
Mostly I'm down with it. You know, it's an incredibly exciting time to be making music. in all regards except, you know, making money at it. But, you know, that sort of, you know, democratization and decentralization is a good thing. It's forced us all to be, you know, craftier about how we, you know, how we pay the bills. And, you know, in our specific universe, it probably means, well, I'll definitely say we've made more money from licensing our music or getting, you know, scoring gigs, you know, based on our music than we have on CD sales. And I think that's kind of a common theme. It's kind of, you know, we've sort of all been forced maybe a little further into the world of commercial music than we wish we were. But it kind of is what it is right now, because, you know, nobody's making their living based on, you know, record label advances anymore.
Okay, is there anything else that you want to say about the band?
No, just I love, you know, I love playing in the group, love playing with Don, and we're about to start a new record working with my friend Jason Carmer, Carmer. If you look him up on Home Music Guide, you'll see his credits. He's like kind of a really interesting, you know, producer who's produced everything from like Run DMC to Merle Haggard.
Nice.
Third Eye Blind. Yeah, no, he's a very, you know, real, you know, eclectic, free-thinking, you know, engineer and producer. And, you know, so we've got a lot of that unexpected written, and, you know, we hope we have it out before too long this year.